is Rockville County 911. What is the address of your emergency?
I'm by Violet. Please, can I get in the car so you can take me to the hospital?
Even days after the most recent fire at BioLab, residents complained about symptoms they thought were caused by the fire.
You're by BioLab?
Yes, I feel like I'm about to die.
Headaches, high blood pressure, trouble breathing, brain fog. A year later, and people are still trying to understand what's happening to their health now and what might happen to the community's health long term.
Please, God, please forgive me. Please don't let me die. Please, God, please, please don't let me die. Please, I have children, God. Please don't let me die. Please, Jesus. Please, God, please don't let me die. Please don't let me die, Lord God.
Okay, all right, I'm going to go ahead and let the hospital know you're coming, okay?
The immediate effects were apparent, and some people reported feeling better as time went on or after they decided to leave the area. Last season, we asked a toxicologist what kinds of symptoms chemicals like chlorine can cause.
You will have irritation of the mucous membranes, the eyes, nose, throat. It can maybe cause symptoms in the lungs like cough, chest pain, shortness of breath.
But Dr. Ziad Kazi did not think some of the other symptoms residents were reporting were connected to the fire.
Of course, the stress of the incident could explain people having elevated blood pressures as a normal reaction to the living through the incident, particularly in the during the event.
More on that in a bit. I still get calls and text messages asking me about very specific symptoms and whether they're related to the fire. What do you do if a year later your health isn't improving and your doctor won't acknowledge the fire as a potential source of the symptoms? You find the researchers who are worried about some of the long-term risks. I'm Pamela Kirkland, and this is Manufacturing Danger, the BioLab story. In our last episode, residents like Cheryl Garcia and Gene Sadler described how they've struggled with health issues they believe were caused by the fire. But the health effects aren't limited to adults.
Oh, I have a question. During the time that the explosion happened, I thought something was in the house burning. But the baby and I became ill. He continued to cough, and he ended up in the hospital with RSV. Is that related? Because I asked the doctor, and she said no.
I don't know. I'm not qualified to answer that, but we can try to get you an answer.
At that same town hall from the last episode, residents heard about the results of testing soil, water, and debris after the fire. But they also posed questions to environmental advocate Scott Smith, who you just heard. He's not a doctor, but the hope for Virginia Crawford was that with more information, she could ask more questions about what caused her foster son to end up in the emergency room.
Yeah, it was scary. We got pictures of it where they had him hooked up to IVs, oxygen in his nose. So they had him all taped down so he couldn't pull the tubes out.
Her foster son name is Namiko, and he is absolutely adorable.
How old is this cutie?
12 months now.
Oh my goodness. So had the birthday, or are you getting ready for the birthday?
Oh, he had it 2 weeks ago.
Oh, happy belated birthday.
Say hi. So,
as Virginia and I tried to talk, Namiko had other plans.
How you doing? You see what I got, don't you? Namiko.
Doing an interview with a one-year-old who has just discovered the joy of running is not ideal. So I met her at her home a few days later, and she told me what happened the morning of the fire.
Well, it was Sunday morning, and I was asleep. At the time, I had a window unit. So I was like crossway of the bed. And this smell came through the vents, and I'm thinking, so I jumped up and ran around. I came in the kitchen to see if anything was burning in here. So I didn't find anything. So I said, oh, well, maybe someone is cooking something, you know, in the neighborhood. So I laid down again, and it got worse.
Virginia said she started coughing, and so did Namiko. It got so bad that they couldn't stay in the house any longer and evacuated to her daughter's apartment in Atlanta.
So I stayed at my daughter's house. We stayed there 3 days, and then she was saying, you know, the smoke was seemed to be clearing according to the news. But when we looked out the window, her window, she on the 14th floor, you can see the smog.
Despite that, Virginia decided she and Namiko would return home, but she noticed she was using her inhaler more and more, and Namiko's cough was getting worse. After a trip to the pediatrician didn't help, she got scared.
So I took him to the emergency room at Arthur Blank's hospital, and after checking him, they decided, you know, his breathing level had went too low, so they put him...
Take your time.
So they hooked him up to bring his oxygen level back up. And so he was there he was there 4 days and 3 nights. And he struggled the whole time he was there.
Virginia Crawford took her foster son to the brand new Children's Healthcare of Atlanta Arthur M. Blank Hospital, the $1.5 billion state-of-the-art facility opened the same day of the fire.
Children's Healthcare of Atlanta has been a place Georgia families trust for the best in pediatric care. With the opening of Arthur M. Blank Hospital, we are transforming once again to meet the needs of our growing community. Come inside.
And just days after that ribbon-cutting ceremony, the hospital faced one of its first major tests.
When I went to the emergency room, there was a lot of people there from Conyers areas with babies and young children. And the hospital was full because they kept all of them.
Virginia said she didn't recognize anyone in the ER with her, but overhearing the conversations, all the parents and caretakers had similar concerns about breathing. I reached out to the hospital to ask about the influx of patients that first week they opened. They did not respond to my request for comment. Virginia says they received excellent care while Namiko was hospitalized. He was ultimately diagnosed with RSV, a respiratory virus. Virginia said the doctor told her his coughing was not related to the fire. Once Namiko's oxygen levels were stabilized, he was able to go home. Since then, Virginia says her health has changed. She's on a stronger inhaler prescription. Namiko's been sick more times than she'd like. I think we can all agree that little kids get sick sometimes. But Virginia has been a foster mother for almost 20 years. To her, something about Namiko's sickness was different.
What do you worry about?
Are they going to, as they get older, will they continue to have the problem of breathing and it turn into cancer? You know, we just don't know, but it doesn't seem like anyone care.
As for Biolab, she said the company actually reached out to her directly after she called to file a claim.
So I called the number, didn't get a name, but they continued to call and check on me, and then it stopped. I didn't hear anything else.
Lynn Paxton, the interim health director for the emergency response to the fire last year, said she wasn't aware of any hospitalizations as a result of the fire at Biolab at the time.
To my knowledge, no one has needed to be hospitalized for this, and I do not believe that there were even that many visits to the emergency room. But again, I'm not in possession of the full data set right now.
Last season, we got that data set. And according to a Georgia Department of Public Health report, At least 1,000 people sought care at hospitals or urgent care centers for symptoms public health says could be related to the accident. DPH investigated just under half of those cases. 77% were Black patients. Sandra Stevens-Jordan, another resident from season one, has been in and out of the hospital since late last year. She's not accounted for in the DPH data set because they stopped tracking admissions on November 11th, less than 2 months after the fire. But Sandra is hell-bent on getting me into one of her doctor's appointments with her. She had asked ahead of time, but couldn't get a firm yes or no. So I tagged along to her pulmonologist appointment, hoping they might allow me to observe.
They came in the same thing. They don't have a lot of other people, a lot of other patients. They came in the reporters. She said, is she a reporter?
Okay.
And I was like, I said, what's the difference between a reporter and a journalist?
She's like, it's the same thing.
Clearly, I did not make it in. But we've stayed in touch as she's been navigating health issues. For her, the fire didn't just worsen existing conditions, it created new ones.
And I have to go, I have a lot more doctor's appointments now than I ever had. Never had to go to a lung specialist. Now I do. I have spots on my lungs, have to do a lot of breathing treatments and all of that stuff.
Sandra has some underlying health issues, but says that for almost a year, just days after the fire, she's seen doctors for dizziness, shortness of breath, and migraines.
I would go to my eye doctor and I was complaining about headaches. And she said my pressure in my eyes was so high. And my blood pressure was up. I was checking my blood pressure. My pressure was up. And my doctor said, she says, you're going to have to go to the hospital. Something is going on with you.
She finally went to the emergency room in December.
And I told him I had been having those headaches for about 3 months. I told him ever since the biolab fire, I had been having those headaches. And he kind of had a little smirk on his face. And he was like, the biolab fire, that was over 3 months ago.
She felt like the doctor brushed off her concerns about the biolab fire. So her mother stepped in as her advocate, pressing them to check her daughter further.
My mom spoke up and she told him, and then he stopped smiling. And he went on ahead and he said, well, we're going to go ahead and run some tests on you.
Doctors ran tests, including an MRI. They ruled out a tumor or stroke, but found fluid on her brain. Sandra was hospitalized for nearly a week.
They had to monitor me day and night because even while I slept at night, my blood pressure was still spiking.
And it wasn't the last time. She was hospitalized again in February after an asthma attack. And in April, she was taken by ambulance in the middle of the night from her local hospital to another hospital about an hour away. A year later, Sandra says her health continues to decline.
Ever since that fire, it's changed a lot with me. I have a lot of more chronic pain in my body. Never had asthma, never had migraines. It's changed a lot for me.
But for her, what's most frustrating is that most of her doctors won't connect what happened at Biolab to what's happening with her body. But one is noting what the Biolab fire may have done.
My ophthalmologist, she did, and she said she was documenting it in my records because of the different changes with my eyes.
She wishes her other doctors would have followed suit.
They just want to keep it hush hush. But to me, why keep it hush hush? It's real. Tell the truth. Let it be known. How can it affect you? I mean, it involves them also. They have been affected as well. Why not tell the truth?
Namiko and Sandra's stories raise the question of how much of what Conyers residents are experiencing can be traced back to Biolab, and what happens when those answers take years to find. To better understand the kind of health problems Conyers residents are seeing, I spoke with Dr. Beatrice Gollum, a physician and researcher at UC San Diego who has spent years studying chemical exposures.
One way to think about it is that the chemicals that we know the most about are the ones that we study because we use them in people and call them medicines.
She has studied communities like Gulf War veterans who were exposed to toxins from so-called burn pits and who still suffer from the chronic illness called Gulf War syndrome. She's using what she's learned about that to study residents in East Palestine, Ohio, who are asking about their health after a 2023 Norfolk Southern train derailment.
A Norfolk Southern train carrying hazardous chemicals derailed in the small Ohio village of East Palestine. Soon after the derailment, officials burned the toxic freight to avoid a possible explosion, sending a black cloud of smoke drifting ominously into the air. As residents returned to their homes days after the crash, many complained of rashes, sore throats, nausea, and headaches.
The trains were carrying hazardous chemicals, including vinyl chloride, which resulted in prolonged fires and controlled burns. To say what she's studying when it comes to chemical exposure in these different scenarios is complicated would be an understatement.
So when you have multiple chemicals, and especially then burned multiple chemicals, which we had in each of those settings with burn pits and the oil fires and the Gulf War, and now with Conyers, Georgia, that burning process can produce hundreds of new chemicals, many of which really have no safety testing.
And with that issue of mixtures, agencies often test for single chemicals. For example, in Conyers, the EPA was monitoring the air for chlorine, but that doesn't reflect what happens in a fire like Biolab when there's more than one chemical compound in the atmosphere or when the fire creates new chemical compounds.
Those safety limits were based on chemicals one by one, and these are not one by one anymore. And so that level that might have been safe had it just been the one exposure may no longer be safe.
She says when those mixtures reach people, the effects can be wide-ranging. The Gulf War illness symptoms experienced by veterans include fatigue, muscle weakness, cognitive problems, and respiratory issues. And she says her research shows children like Namiko may be especially vulnerable.
It is not uncommon that women and children are more affected than men in many chemical exposure settings.
Last season, we talked a lot about one symptom, high blood pressure or hypertension. It was a common complaint I heard from many people. I spoke with Dr. Ziad Kazi, a toxicologist at Emory University, and he told me there was no link between the chemicals in the Biolab fire and the high blood pressure so many residents reported.
Now, regarding the hypertension, which is more of a chronic condition, people are complaining of right now. This is not related to these chemicals.
And if you're wondering why he was so adamant, records show Dr. Kazi was sent a list of talking points after the fire by the Georgia Poison Center, guidance for anyone with questions about exposure to irritant gases. Dr. Gollum sees it differently.
Hypertension is one of the many conditions that multiple studies have shown is elevated in veterans with Gulf War illness. And it's a classic condition that rises in settings of oxidative stress and cell energy impairment.
For residents like Sandra, who've struggled with a symptom like extremely high blood pressure, Dr. Gollum says there is evidence that these exposures can play a role.
If there is new, worse, or less controllable blood pressure, then that that certainly is a possibility because, again, there we have absolutely abundant data tying mixed chemical exposures to elevated rates.
For residents in Conyers, that contradiction is frustrating. Doctors on the ground have been reluctant to connect the dots. But research from other disasters suggests the symptoms people here describe, from blood pressure spikes to breathing problems, could potentially fit a pattern. The problem is, proving it takes time. Research studies like the one Dr. Gollum is leading can take years, sometimes decades. And for residents already living with the health effects, the answers that arrive too late are really no answer at all. It's not just the human health impacts that are raising questions. Remember those animals from season one?
You hear that? That's one of the first things you notice when you visit the Service Master by Lovejoy warehouse in Conyers across the street from BioLab. The chickens. Some are pretty big, healthy looking.
Chris Lovejoy and Stephanie Donnelly told me that some of the chickens died immediately after the fire at BioLab. Their old shop was directly across the street from the plant. And last season, they told me someone took the chickens that died and replaced them with new ones.
He goes, but don't worry about it. We replaced all the chickens.
So those chickens outside are not the original chickens?
We don't know how many or which ones are. We're pretty sure that the three up front, at least two in that front cage, are not the originals. But yeah, I was just like, so you've been on my property and you've been taking the things that died away. And I was like, that was really convenient for you guys, so nobody can run tests on them.
As I was reporting for this season, I'd ride past BioLab every so often just to see if anything was happening around there. On one of those trips, I rode past the old Service Master by Lovejoy shop. I saw their sheep were resting in the shade near the parking lot, but I noticed the pen with the chickens was gone. So I texted Stephanie to ask where they'd gone. She told me the chickens had died, all of them. The new ones and the originals. And the sheep, she says they've developed some strange growths on their bodies. No one can say for certain what caused any of that, but it leaves residents wondering what else might surface in the years ahead. Next time on Manufacturing Danger, the BioLab story.
We have one airplane. It's gone to 180 different emergency response sites since 9/11. So why it didn't go this last year to Conyers, Georgia is a mystery to everybody.
The cleanup from the fire is over, but the reality on the ground versus the findings of the response leave room for questions. The response to the fire and the cleanup, that's the next episode. Manufacturing Danger, the BioLab story, is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting. This podcast was written by me, Pamela Kirkland. Grant Blankenship is our senior editor. GPB's podcast team includes Sandy Malcolm, Jeremy Powell, Jake Cook, and Mark Davenport. For more, visit gpb.org/podcasts.